Well, good morning. This is the Lou Rockwell Show, and how great it is to have as our guest this morning, Mr. Donald Jeffries. Donald is the author of one of the most extraordinary books I've ever read. It's called Hidden History, an expose of modern crimes, conspiracies, and cover-ups in American politics. So not only does this book cover everything from the assassination of John F. Kennedy to current crimes and conspiracies of the American regime, it does it in a very small compass. There's 375 pages, yet it does it thoroughly and just a tremendously well-done narrative. I mean, this is a book, this is not a difficult book to read. In fact, it's a difficult book to put down once you pick it up. I can't recommend it strongly enough. It's just, if you're interested in the real history of our time, if you're interested in what you're being lied to about and what the truth is, get a copy of Hidden History. And it's so great to have the author on with us this morning. Don Jeffries, when he was 19 years old, went to work for the great Mark Lane, author of the first revisionist work on the Kennedy assassination, a man, of course, was persecuted for that. He's been researching the Kennedy assassination for 40 years, teaches a course in it, and he's also an expert in a whole bunch of other things, whether it's the assassination of Martin Luther King, the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy, the assassination of John F. Kennedy Jr., the truth about the killing of bin Laden, 9/11, the Oklahoma City bombing. I mean, we can just go down the list of all the things that have riveted us as Americans over these years, ever since Kennedy was assassinated. This is the book to help you guide you through what actually happened and to explain to you just how rotten the American regime is. I mean, that's another great thing about this book. So, Don, what got you interested in the Kennedy? Why did you go to work for Mark Lane? You were 19. What got you interested in all this?
Well, thanks for all the kind words, Mr. Rockwell. I became politically aware during Watergate, ironically enough, as a teenager. And I just happened to read a book called They've Killed the President, which actually turned out to be not one of the better books on the Kennedy assassination by Robert Sam Hansen. Then I read Rusty Desmond by Mark Lane and Accessories After the Fact by Sylvia Moore, all the early works, the Whitewash series from Harold Weisberg. And I heard about the Citizens Committee of Inquiry, which was near, I'm in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. still, I was then. And Mark Lane had his office in D.C., and that was the headquarters. They tried to lobby in Congress, and so it was kind of natural for me to gravitate to that, and it was an exciting time. We were just off the Watergate era, and there was a sense of reform in the air, and then it's just terribly disillusioning for a lot of us when the House Select Committee on Assassinations ended up being such a disappointment because they wound up supporting all the Warren Commission conclusions, and at the last minute they had the introduction of some acoustic evidence, which is really dubious compared to the other evidence, and just kind of concluded that it was probably a conspiracy. Most of us were very disappointed about it, but at that time I was gung-ho and idealistic, and I thought I could be one of the next Woodward and Bernstein and uncover all these scandals that I was discovering, and it was terribly disappointing to find out that the mainstream media was one of the main culprits in all this and the reason why so many people don't know the truth.
You mentioned Woodward and Bernstein and Watergate. You also tell us the real story about that, which, of course, like all these events, is not exactly the one that's peddled by the mainstream media and academia and big corporations and, of course, the government itself, the entire regime that oppresses us.
Yeah, I mean, really, in Watergate, going back over what I wrote in the book, Nixon actually comes off pretty well compared to most of the other presidents. I actually have less on him than anything. I wasn't really a body count I could find compared to the other presidents, other than a lot of people related to Watergate. But I think, as Len Kolodny and some other people have talked about, I think Watergate was basically, it really was kind of a two-bit burglary. And it was amazing to see how that was really the only time in my lifetime that the press worked the way it's supposed to work, where they went after the president with gung-ho and they had Deep Throat, you had Woodward and Bernstein, and front page stories every day on the Washington Post. But it was later when I realized these are the same people that are still covering up the Kennedy assassination, that have gone after nothing. Ben Bradley was supposedly JFK's best friend, and then you find out later in his childhood friend was Richard Holmes. They grew up together, and there's such an overlap there, and the Post just covered up through George Lardner Jr. for years, all the way down to when they leaked an advance copy of Oliver Stone's JFK script. George, ironically from Harold Weisberg, yet another of the critics who leaked it to George Lardner Jr. And the press just never tells the truth. I mean, anyone who reads my book, if there's an underlying theme of it, is it just if we had some real, you know, some of those old reporters with the, you know, the cigarette dangling out of their mouth and the, you know, the shot of bourbon next to them and pecking away on the typewriter. If we had those kind of guys that, you know, we saw in the old days, maybe, these things would not happen because they'd be destroyed. Instead, we have to depend on people on the internet, which is great because that's where the real journalism is now. People out of their basements, you know, putting on great YouTube videos and so forth. But the mainstream media, you know, you can see it in this presidential campaign. It's just, they become so transparent where they don't even try to feign that they're journalists anymore. They're just cheerleaders for this corrupt state we have.
The late Murray Rothbard, who was a strong advocate of what he called good conspiracy theories, he said they're bad conspiracy theories, they're good conspiracy theories. It's up to the scholar to tell the difference, but he thought it was extremely important. Good conspiracy theories were extremely important, and he included it in his historical writing, and certainly was very interested in the Kennedy assassination and all these sorts of things. And would he have loved this book? But I think you mentioned Watergate, and you also write about the shooting of George Wallace. Was that a Republican deal? What happened there? We all know that it wasn't just a lone nut, right? It's always a lone nut. Turns out never to be a lone nut.
No, all these things are just explained away in such a tidy way. I mean, America's the only nation where politicians get killed or get removed from office, and it's we're supposed to believe it's not for political reasons. You know, and we're always asked to believe this. And in the case of Wallace, I think he was still representing perhaps a semi-threat to the establishment. I don't know. He was you know, kind of a renegade out there, and you know, I didn't have that much on that in the book, but certainly Arthur Lee Bremer, he's a three-namer like so many of these assassins are, which I find humorous. But, you know, I mean, certain people in the CIA were seen, you know, going to his apartment or whatever right after the assassin. There were too many people there that had dubious backgrounds, and they just kind of swept that under the rug. And he's one of these guys that I believe he's still alive, and I've never seen an interview with him. You know, you think somebody might want to talk to people like that, but you know, we really didn't see an interview with John Hinckley for a long time, and he's finally been released. But he really stayed under the radar. And you think these people would be, you know, they certainly interviewed Charles Manson enough, but they don't interview these guys for some reason. And I would expect that should be something. In fact, I believe John Hinckley was begging to be interviewed. You know, and for some reason they just wouldn't do it. So, but that's the kind of press we have. You know, we don't have, and there's no curiosity there. And the only skepticism they have is towards people like me or you that are, you know, that are questioning these things. They, you know, they question the questioners. You know, they say, you know, what do you mean? Why do you think this? And instead of, and we've seen it recently in all the WikiLeaks. I mean, all the thrust of the argument on the part of journalists everywhere is that who leaked it? Was it Russia? You know, did Trump have anything to do with it? And nothing about the fact that the leak reveals that the Democratic Party's primary process was completely corrupt and it was overtly stealing the nomination from the People's Choice, Bernie Sanders, and giving it to Hillary Clinton. But nobody cares about that. Instead, is, well, who leaked it? You know, just like Bradley Manning, Chelsea Manning, whatever, is sitting in prison for decades, you know, for simply reviewing the horrendous conduct of our troops, you know, overseas. And same thing with Snowden, where he's in exile because he can't come back because the left and right alike, you know, they want to prosecute him for revealing that our government was spying on us. So I really don't know how we can get anything done without when the media is really just they can't. I know Pravda, I guess, was the, and TASS were bad back in the days, the height of the Soviet Union, but I can't believe they were much more overtly spokespersons for the state than our own mainstream media is at this point.
No, I have a friend, Yuri Maltsev, who was an economist in the Soviet Union, and he says the difference is in the Soviet Union, nobody believed Pravda or TASS. They always assumed they were lying. He said, I come to America, and everybody's believing the mainstream media.
Yeah, that's the saddest part, is that they, I mean, I don't know how many times it has to happen where they can go back to the Gulf War where that CNN reporter was faking a Scud attack, and, you know, oh my God, we're in the middle. And they know he did, and his career didn't miss a blip. He's still doing things, and during the Trayvon Martin Zimmerman fiasco, they edited a tape to make it sound, to try to make it appear that Zimmerman was bringing up race. MSNBC admitted it. Nothing happened. Recently, Katie Couric had some kind of a little special on gun control, and the entire thing was edited to make it look like the people who were pro-Second Amendment were just sitting there stupefied where they couldn't answer her ridiculous talking point. And, of course, they had edited it when they actually, of course, had answers that just blew her arguments away. But it still, these people still, in a lot of the public eye, and that's the problem we have, is that about more and more people are becoming awake, but the ones that are asleep are just... they're in a comas. I mean, you can't wake them. They just, no matter what, they just give you that look. And it's very frustrating, because without people becoming awake and aware, it's hard to really get rid of this corruption.
But you think there's a reason for hope in the conduct of the media right now? Because, Rothbard, again, he always loved the fact that in the 19th century, it was clear who the newspapers were for. It was clear their ideological orientation. And therefore, the reader could judge what they were saying from that, knowing what their point of view was. He said then in the 20th century, they all pretended not to have a point of view. They're just merely disinterested journalists who just want to bring you the truth, and they're just investigating the facts, and they don't actually have a point of view. Well, of course, that was that was a lie. But now, maybe for the first time, it seems to me it's becoming evident to regular people that the media are just a scam, that they're just a con job, that they just just have one point of view, and they suppress other points of view, and they're just a bunch of corrupt propagandists. Is it possible that, and certainly the polls seem to indicate that fewer people believe them? Maybe this is an opening for the kind of journalism you do, for all the other great work that's happening on the internet. Is it possible that this could be a turning point for us, as against discrediting the mainstream media and bringing new interest to those who are actually telling the truth?
Well, I hope so. But what we've seen so far is, I mean, this really, I liken it to, finally people are seeing how the sausage is being made, both in both of our major parties, because we saw it in the Republican primary process where the leaders were overtly trying to steal the nomination from the front runner, Donald Trump, and everybody knew it. I mean, they were coming, at one point, I believe it was Prince Rivas who said on national TV, yeah, you got a good point there. I really don't know why people would vote. Why are they voting if the party chooses the delegates? And he says, yeah, you got a good point. I don't know why. And in the case of Bernie Sanders, I mean, he was drawing rallies of 30,000 people, signs everywhere, young people and dudes behind him, and Hillary Clinton couldn't fill a room. And you're seeing that now with Trump having those kind of rallies and Hillary. So people, again, that are awake or are buying into it, but what my fear is with the massive voting fraud we had, and we saw it so much in the primary season, that I just don't know, even if people wake up, because we have the dichotomy to consider that not only does the media have an approval rating of like 6%, but our congressional representatives have approval rating of around the same thing, 6, 7, 8%. Yet every election, we're supposed to believe that these same people who hate them reelect 96% of the incumbents. So how does that happen? I mean, and they try to brush that off as well. You know, people, they hate Congress, but they love their own congressman. I've never met anybody that loves their congressman. What does your congressman do for you?
We all hate our congressman if we know anything about him.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, you should hate your own congressman more. I mean, but for that argument, it makes no sense. So, but, if people have read my book, now I have a long section on vote scam there where the Collier brothers just did a great job of showing that back in the 80s that this stuff was, I mean, they were, capturing and videotaping League of Women Voters, messing with the Chads and counting the same votes over and over again. It's even easier with the electronic voting, and so it's hard to trust the process. So that's why I place so much emphasis on, what kind of crowds, and we saw this during 2012 when Ron Paul, I mean, I went to some of his rallies, and my son and his friend were very involved in this campaign, and, they'd be wrapped around the buildings, and, hip turn people away, and then, they'd tell you that Rick Santorum, who'd have like 10 people at a rally, was beating him, and it doesn't pass the eye test, and we're seeing the same thing now, I think, with Hillary Clinton, where she clearly has very little support, and the only support she has is because the people that are still buying into that narrative from the mainstream media are just hating on Trump and they're trying to stop him. But I very, very few people, I think, are actually excited about voting for her. But, you know, once again, Ron Paul did not, he did not make enough of an issue of it as he should have after 2012. Trump talked a little bit about it, but Bernie Sanders, you know, really should have made an issue about it. And I think until the people that are getting robbed and are being screwed over by the process, until they actually make an issue of it, the voting fraud is going to continue because the mainstream media is never going to question it. They don't care. They're just going to tell you, yeah, you know, Hillary Clinton, she won, or, you know, sure, there's not a sign in the entire district, but somehow she won that district. No bumper stickers. She has to cancel rallies because nobody's there, but somebody's voting for her. But some of us out here don't buy it.
No, it's so do you think that she will end up stealing this election?
Well, it's hard to tell what's going on with this, you know, with this mysterious illness of hers. I don't, she almost, she at times she doesn't even, you know, look alive. I mean, there's conspiracy theories all over the internet. She's replaced by a double. I mean, you know, she just, you know, she looks like she has to be propped up. She has coughing fits. She's passing out. So I really don't, she's certainly who they want. And I, you know, unless this is the greatest psyop of all time, they're really opposed to Trump. And I never in a million years thought that I would like somebody like Donald Trump, but he's, you know, he's got all the right enemies. Sometimes you have to look at, well, you know, the entire establishment is aligned against him, really. It's amazing. And whether he's the real deal or not, I know, but we know Hillary Clinton isn't the real deal. And I've voted so many times for third-party candidates, and I just, they're not going to count their votes, and we know they're never going to win. So I would either vote for Trump or sit the election out. But at this point, I don't know what to expect. I can't imagine if Trump is the real deal that the establishment will let him become president. I mean, I expect if he did somehow win the election, you'd almost expect the Supreme Court to come up with some kind of decision. Now, he wasn't qualified to be president or something. And I'm sure the media would say, yeah, you know, this has always been this way, you know.
Or is there a chance of if he's for real? And I don't know whether he's for real or not. Although it's heartening that all the right people hate his guts. I mean, I like that. But is it possible that there'll be a lone nut? We already had one guy apparently attempt to kill him. And of course, when you think of the hate campaign going on,
yeah,
might even
yeah.
Stimulate an actual lone nut. But my guess is it would be all planned.
That would certainly seal the deal, you know. then we'd know he was the real guy. I don't know, you know, they haven't assassinated anybody. That was all in vogue in the '60s. And but you mentioned Wallace, and then of course the assassination attempt on Reagan, really in 1981, was really the last attempt at a major politician, you know, that we could look at behind it for political reasons. So I don't know. They don't seem to, you know, that doesn't seem to be the way. They operate now. They have smear campaigns, which they've certainly tried so hard on Trump. But the thing I think that's backfiring on is the more they try the predictable tactics against him, the more support he gets because people hate the media so much. And as you mentioned, and I've alluded to many, I've lost so many friends on social media just because saying good things about Trump. But I said, look, you know, he's an awful candidate in many ways. I mean, you know, he really talks like a third grader half the time. He can't formulate his sentences. He's like a WWE guy half the time, too. So he could clearly be a phony with his background. Who knows? But his most attractive feature is the hatred he draws from everybody. That's his most attractive quality. Well, you know, God, if all the big bankers hate him and the people of Bohemian Grove and the entire mainstream media, he's the first candidate in my lifetime that I know of that is not getting money from the Goldman Sachs and, you know, the predictable people that usually back both candidates so they, you know, they know they've got a winner either way. In this case, nobody's backing him. So,
in fact, Goldman Sachs actually ordered all its employees not to give him any money.
Yeah, I mean, that's
that wasn't even controversial. Well,
you know, that's so, but it is hard. I mean, I don't know anybody that is supporting him is mainly doing it because I think he represents something symbolically at this point. You know, it's kind of a big, giant middle finger to the establishment.
That's right.
You know, and that's really the only, I don't know what he'd do, but I know that, you know, we know what Hillary Clinton would do, or any other Democrat that they put in there. So, you know, if he just simply rolled back, if he just stopped TPP, you know, if he did something to try to bring industry back to the country, I mean, that would be just, that's a major plank of globalism. So, if, you know, if he could do something like that, that's anything else. I don't like his, you know, his rhetoric on certainly talking about torture and Guantanamo Bay. And he, but on the other hand, he's also talked about we've wasted trillions on these wars, and he seems to have been against most of our occupations, and he's the only one that doesn't want to go to war with Russia. So I don't know. He's, at this point, he's I think our only choice.
Well, Don, what's going on right now that is not included in this book that you're maybe going to put in your next book?
Well, I've got a lot of projects going on. In fact, I'm working on Hidden History 2, which is going to be pre-1963 conspiracies.
Oh, tremendous.
Yeah, so, you know, and it's probably going to get a little harder to be published because it's got a lot of, and you, I'm sure you know, I know you've published the work of Thomas DiLorenzo, a great admirer of his. It's got a long section on Lincoln, so it's going to be a... It's not going to be something the court historians will like, and they probably won't like my section on FDR. And
don't forget there's Amazon and CreateSpace. You can publish it yourself and circumvent all these creeps.
Well, yeah, if I had to, I would do that. But I think, you know, at this point, the Hidden History's done well, and I've already committed to the next book with Skyhorse. So I think they'll stick with me. We'll see, hopefully. But, you know, maybe some of it... have to be toned down a little bit, but it's, you know, I want people to recognize, you know, because I have had people say, you know, it didn't begin with the Kennedy assassination. I said, yeah, I realize that, but in my lifetime, you know, I was 7 when he was assassinated. I just draw a line, like if you had a graph, you know, at that point, I think on November 26, 1963, in a lot of ways, America was at its peak. You know, life was good. You know, you had jobs for anyone who wanted them, pretty much. We had the post-war boom was still going, the suburbs were flourishing. But, you know, from that moment on, I think, and it's the main reason is because they sold the people such a lame explanation that very few people ever bought. And, you know, we had this tremendous change, and then psychologically going to this LBJ character who was just such a, you know, such a hokey hack party politician, where you had this eloquent guy who could speak well before. I think psychologically... that just had a lot of impact, and it led the way to the rest of the 60s. So, but I don't want people to think it's just so... You know, I'm going to try to concentrate on all the things that happened before then, you know, from the Revolutionary War, you know, forward.
Excellent. But wasn't the Kennedy assassination also a coup? I mean, it wasn't just killing this one guy. It did mean a change in the regime, a significant change, much for the worst, of course, as you point out.
Yeah, I mean, it most people, and I think that there's been an effort for a long time, especially among the left. Kennedy, as you know, if you read my book, I just castigate the left every time, because the left absolutely hates John F. Kennedy, and they hate the Kennedys, period. And he was a voice for peace. He was an actual idealist who believed, he was more of a classical liberal, and he was trying to do things he thought were right, but the main reason they hated him is because he represented, he was trying to do things on his own. I mean, he was talking about abolishing the CIA. He was going after the mafia. He knew about the Federal Reserve, and his father, I'm sure, told him all about the bankers and the Federal Reserve, so he had to have heard a lot of talk about that. And between him and his brother, these were, you know, rich outsiders, much as, you know, who knows, maybe Trump would be that way too. I don't know. You, the only kind of outsider we're ready to hit in America is going to be a multimillionaire or a billionaire, because average people are just, they're just kept outside the gates of power. The system is just not going to allow them in there. So all we can hope for is a renegade like a Trump, you know, to come in there and do it. But it certainly was a coup. And like I said, I don't think we've ever recovered from it. And they've had to kill several other Kennedys since then, because blood is thicker than water, and I think they realize, as, you know, my section on John F. Kennedy Jr., is that, you know, I expose the fact, you know, from talking to people, that he had a quest to find out who had killed his father. Unlike the rest of the Kennedy family, he wanted to know, and he was about to enter the world of politics.
Donald Jeffries, thanks so much for coming on today. Thanks for writing this great book, Hidden History, an expose of modern crimes, conspiracies, and cover-ups in American politics. We look forward to your next book and to the work, all the work you're doing. We'll link to your blog, Keeping It Unreal, and I hope you'll come on again when your next book comes out.
That'll be great. Anytime. Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Well, thanks so much for listening to the Lou Rockwell Show today.
take a look at all the podcasts. There have been hundreds of them. There's a link on the LRC front page. Thank you.